This is the Author Archive podcast. I'm David Freeman. My guest today is an old friend, a bit of a blues hero, a bit of a folk music hero, a bit of a music hero, Eric Bibb. And Eric, you now live outside Stockholm?
Yes, about an hour south of Stockholm, Dave. Hey, great.
How are you keeping?
Very well, you know. Still traveling, not as much as before, but still, you know, letting people know I'm out here, still doing it. And we just came back from Vienna. We had two nice shows with our friend Hans Tersink in Vienna. And we're off to New Zealand and Australia in about 3 weeks, something like that.
I was thinking about your life. I want to talk about the new album in a minute, but you've probably never had a proper job, have you?
No, not for long. Let's look back. I did work for the postal service here in Sweden for a while. I was on a bicycle delivering the mail. That I've done. So let's call me postillion. Yes, I've been that.
And you were born in the early 50s into this, what sounds to me like a remarkably good family to be born into. I mean, your dad, Leon, I mean, he was well known in the day, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was part of a wonderful kind of folk music renaissance that was centered around New York, specifically Greenwich Village. So, you know, his contemporaries were people like Pete Seeger, you know, Odetta, Josh White. So through my dad, I was just baptized in this wonderful river of song, you know, and it just stayed with me, that baptism.
Did he tell you you were going to be good? Did he encourage you? Did he praise you?
He definitely encouraged me in his kind of a respectful way, meaning he didn't really want to push me into anything that wasn't really made for me. But he didn't have to push at all. All he had to do was take me to his rehearsals and concerts, and I was hooked, and he knew it. So, you know, he paid for guitar lessons, piano lessons, rehearsed at home so that I could play his accompanist instruments. They always had great guitars, you know. They'd lend me guitars. It was a perfect world, you know.
And I mean, we were once sitting having coffee somewhere, probably in Oxford, and you were reminiscing about when the likes of Bob Dylan came round, and he offered you little hints about what you should do.
Well, yeah, the one time that I met Bob Dylan up close was actually in my own living room at the age of 11. He was twice my age, and I've repeated this story so many times. It's time I met him just to say thanks, Bob. But he came to a party my dad had, you know, there were some other celebs there, but he was new in town. He was the hot news in town. Everybody was talking about Bob Dylan. And there he was in my living room, and I went right up to him in my pajamas, and I said, you know, hi, I'm Eric, I play guitar too. And he struck up a conversation wherein he told me, you know, keep it simple, forget all the fancy stuff.
Was you right?
I'll never forget it. Yeah.
Was you right?
Yeah. You know, I think he was referring to the commercial side of folk music that was kind of bothersome to people like him. You know, he didn't really go for the big symphonic productions, you know, arranged folk songs. He was more in Woody Guthrie's, you know, trail. But I think keeping it simple is good advice in life, and certainly in music.
That brings me to the new double album. Where was it recorded? Where was this?
Oh, actually, it's not a double. I think it's just we decided we would release just a one long playing LP. But it was recorded at a wonderful theater called the Scala Theater in Stockholm, a very old venue, beautiful, smaller theater. And wow, we had one night there, and it was like do or die, because usually, you know, you want two nights so that you can pick the best performances. And but this was one shot, and we had a whole cast of wonderful musicians, including a string quartet. So yeah, it was the hot seat, and it worked out great.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, because I mean I booked you play with a band, a bass player. You made an album with Danny Thompson, didn't you? Great bass
Yes.
player. But to hear you playing with a string quartet was a bit, that was a bit of a revelation. What was the way of thinking to get to that?
Well, we'd had arrangements for actually full string orchestra for some of the recordings that we'd done in the past. We'd hired one or two of our favorite arrangers, which we have. There's a guy named Eric Arvinder here in Sweden. He spends his time in Los Angeles and in Stockholm. Great arranger. And he'd arranged a couple of tunes prior to this concert, but we had to scale his big orchestrations down to a quartet size, which we asked him to do. And I was just shocked at how full the quartet arrangements were. To sit there playing in front of an audience, Dave, and have behind me this incredible waterfall of sound, coming from four wonderful players who were, reading the arrangement. And basically, the conductor was me. My body language, which they saw from behind, was telling them, the tempo and all that. And it just worked out. It just worked out lovely.
Tradition you come from, folk, blues, jazz, there's a sort of make it up as you go along sort of tradition, tweak it as you go. But if you've got a string quartet who are playing from the score, you can't really do that. So did you feel constrained?
Well, very good question, Dave, which takes me to an analysis of my style of performing and writing. To tell you the truth, the improvisations that will come about in my performances will be vocal or guitar things that happen inside a set arrangement. I'm pretty loyal and faithful to my original structure, of the recorded song. In other words, I might shift verses around a little bit. I might extend a tag, an outro, or an intro. But basically, once a song is written, that's pretty much the way I'm going to perform it. So for me, it wasn't a strain to stick to the arrangements that the string players had. But what was a little nervy was the fact that if I stumbled, I couldn't make a kind of really clever bib save. Because they wouldn't be with me. They'd be on the next two bars ahead, So it was like, this is it, man. You better just do this stuff right, Yeah.
You loved it playing with them.
I did. I loved it, and I loved the result. I loved the tension because at the one moment I'm concentrating for all I'm, worth, and at the second I'm relaxing in such a heavenly sound. So it's a kind of interesting tension to be in some kind of musical heaven at the same time that you're trying not to fall off the bike,
It seems to me that you've always been an enthusiast. Are you managing to keep that enthusiasm into mature life?
Another great question, brother. Yes, happily I have decided that even as I slow down in many ways, and even as I desire to remain at home for longer stretches, I thoroughly enjoy the creative process of writing a new song. I thoroughly enjoy the process of recording that song. And I even recognize that as much resistance as I might have to leaving home, there's nothing like thrilling an audience with a new song. So, I'm hooked. Yeah.
So is performing in front of an audience, and I've seen you do it many times, and you're really good at it. Does that remain a major driver of what you do? Do you love the moment when you can see the whites of their eyes and the smile of their teeth?
I don't think that's the driving force. I think that's basically the cherry on the cake. I think just starting a new song, knowing that I'm onto something and that there will probably be a good song at the end of this day, Being in that zone is so energizing and so thrilling still that it leads to the next step, which is wanting to hear it myself coming back at me so that I have to begin recording it. First on my telephone, then I send that little demo to my producer, and blah, blah, blah. And the process goes on until we've got to finish recording. And then, like I said, the third phase is actually, all right, we've got a gig coming up. Do we dare do this new song? Can we do an arrangement on stage with the band or solo even, or duo that's going to do justice? Is this a song that we can do properly on stage? Some songs remain just songs that I've recorded and probably never will perform live, but they're getting fewer because my producer and my musical director is very confident and very keen to push me.
Your dad
Was motivated by idealism and politics, I think. Wasn't, would that be fair?
Yes, that would be fair that he, to say that he, like his mentor Paul Robeson, was a humanist who believed in equality and justice for everybody.
You can't argue with
That, can you?
you can't argue, you can't beat that with a hammer.
What drives you now? The 70-something Eric Bibb. Renowned legendary blues man who does blues cruises, who tops the bill. What, I mean, there are so many fine songs in your repertoire. Where does a new one start? Is it a word? Is it a chord change that we don't recognize? What is it?
Yes, all of the above. And quite often, even though it's certainly not the bulk of my repertoire, but a significant amount of my songs have at their core a historical event that I want to shed some light on. That's become something that I've known about. It's part of my, musical upbringing, songs that are topical. I'm not a protest singer, as the word goes, because I'm not protesting about anything. What I am doing is wanting to draw attention to stuff that maybe is uncomfortable for us to look at face on and figure out where we can actually make the world a better place by learning from our barbarism,
Yes.
Depressing things happening. The world, you were there in the 60s. I mean, there was a huge amount of idealism and a lot of energy in music then.
Yes, totally.
Is it still there? Because is it just me? I don't feel it the same. I don't
No,
see
you're
it the
not going
same.
to feel it. I don't think we're going to feel it in the air like we did back in the day. I think that was a global phenomenon where it certainly blossomed in a dramatic way in the States for a lot of reasons, and certainly in England. But that collective optimism, idealism, naivete, belief in a better future for us if we stay, with the cause. That faith in our own power to change things, because we actually saw what could happen when together we made our voices heard. We could see that it was affecting the establishment and the status quo. So we were energized by that. I don't feel that collective energy. Maybe it's a generation thing. Maybe a younger generation in some other form feels that. I don't think so. I think there is concern with basic, survival of the human species to the point where people perhaps are less concerned with other issues. But I think the whole process never really stops, Dave. I think it has peaks and valleys. I think we were living in the 60s on that peak. And I think things are going to get worse before they get better, but I think they're going to get better.
In conclusion, Eric Bibb, can I find in your soul some optimism?
Totally. And I can't explain it better than to say that it's the same optimism that keeps me excited about writing a new song. Somehow, the power of music and its ability to change and its ability to uplift and delight is like a running river through my whole experience. And that river has not dried up at all. If anything, I'm encouraged to actually go deeper into the stuff that was so essential in my formative years, you know, deeper into the folk music, deeper into the folk side, deeper into the earlier exponents of this music, because they have something that, of course, has diminished to a degree over time, even though other things have sprouted. But there's something at the core of, let's call it the country blues or African-American folk music, spirituals and a lot, work songs. There's something there that is so powerful, that is influenced so much, that I just want to, you know, penetrate the mystery more. I think there's more to be learned. Yeah.
I'll wait to see you do it again live. Eric Bibb, thank you so much for your time.
David, it's so nice to talk with you about serious stuff that, you know, means something to us both. Love it.
Going down to the river soothes my soul just to watch it flow. Looking at the leaves turning gold, my mind needs a change of scene. Don't wanna say something unkind, I don't mean. Don't feel like talking, got nothing to say. Please don't preach. Can't agree to disagree. My mind's acting like a screen. Don't wanna say something unkind, I don't mean. It's true, I don't make enough time just to be with you. Time and again, it's the same old story, nothing new.